The Jackie Capri Show.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jackie Capri Show on Aculco Radio. I'm delighted to have in the studio today television, film and stage writer, director, producer Tony McHale. Tony, for the past 30 years you've had a successful career writing for series such as Casualty, EastEnders, Holby City, which you co-created and on which you were executive producer, Waking the Dead, Silent Witness and Trial and Retribution, to name but a few. However, you were not always a writer. You started out as an actor and you were very successful. So what made you switch to writing and directing?
I always did write and I always did direct, strangely enough, Jackie. I always say to people the reasons I switched weren't so much as a switch as when people started paying me to do different things. So it was like, you know, I always did write, so when people started paying me to write, I sort of slowly slid over into that direction.
I can see why. Yes. But something happened to you, didn't it? You were, I mean, I know that you did a lot of well-known things on TV and film, and you did a lot of theatre. And then you got a part in Coronation Street.
Oh, God, yeah, that was the end of my acting career, really. Yeah.
Well, tell us what happened.
Oh, well, it was coming up to Christmas. I can't remember the exact year now anymore. My acting agent rang up and said, do you want to do this part in Coronation Street? I said, yeah, what is it? You know, I'd have done it, whatever it was, really.
Of course.
You know, and they said, it's the killer character. I said, fantastic. Killing a character, that's brilliant. That's what I did. Because I was tended to play sort of goody-goody guys, you know, and the guy next door and things like this. So killing a character was, like, really great. And it was a character called Ernie Bishop for you. You know, stalwarts of Coronation Street or may remember Ernie Bishop. Excuse me. You'll definitely remember Emily Bishop. I think she's actually still in the show.
I think she is.
Yeah, you know, which is amazing. Anyway, so I went up to Manchester, shot it, and literally shot Ernie because it was in a wages snatch, and he got gunned down by a sawn-off shotgun. At that time, it was the first time they'd have a weapon on the set of Coronation Street. I don't know if they've ever had one since, but there was a major furore about it, you know, and everybody went kicked back and all that sort of thing, and it was headline news, and I ended up getting attacked on the street, and I was doing a film out in Jersey at the time, went to do a film called Force 10 from Navarone, which was a sequel.
Oh, I remember that. I saw that.
Yeah. I was doing a lot of hanging around because we couldn't do my scene because there was wind. There was massive, massive winds. And I went down to this sort of cafe place in St. Helier in Jersey in the afternoon and just had a cup of tea or something. And this woman kept staring at me, this little old lady kept staring at me. And eventually one day, a second or third day, and she came over and she said, "I know you." And I said, I'm terribly sorry. I don't afraid I know you. And she said, "I do, I know you, you murderer." And I went, "Oh, yeah." And I became sort of all lovey about it. I went, you know, "Oh, yeah. You mean, you know, Ernie Bishop, you know, yeah. Oh, yes. It was a role I was offered and all that sort of stuff." And then she went, "Yes, but I know your sort," and started hitting me with her umbrella, which was quite more alarming, I think, for everybody in the cafe.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And that was, you just did one episode as the murderer, did you?
I think it was two or three, funny. There was a little build-up, I remember. In those days, it was great as well because, you know, there was a car chase, and you're allowed to do your own stunts in those days.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
God.
You know, and the cameraman was hanging out the side of the car, which you'd never be able to get away with these days.
God.
You know, and, you know, I did the driving. It was great. I loved it, you know.
Oh,
it was
wow.
fun.
But I mean, people do take things seriously. I mean, she obviously, your character, I mean, really, it's an attribute to your acting. She obviously thought you were so good as the murderer that she believed you really were a murderer.
I wish it was my acting. It's probably the, it's probably the show, really. You know, and the amazing thing about those shows, and I've, you know, been involved in quite a lot of them, is that, you know, the great thing about them, in a way, is that people take them incredibly seriously. Yeah. And they believe them. You know, and my mother-in-law, who sadly is not no longer with us, you know, that was almost her life for a long time. You know, she couldn't quite understand that I was in control of these shows as well, you know, that, that I actually created the stories in them. And she, you know, because she just thought they were almost real,
Of course. Oh, wow. Now, you've chosen, your first track is Palisades Park, sung by Freddie Cannon. So can you tell me why you've chosen that track?
Yeah, I just, it's, as you actually know, Jackie, I've got a jukebox in my house.
I do indeed, yes.
And I love those sort of old 45s and things like that. And Palisades Park represents really another time. I think it was recorded in 1962 by Freddie Cannon. And it represents a real time for me when there was an innocence about life. And it represents the time when I actually met my wife, Jan. And it was just... It sort of encapsulates that sort of innocence of young love, almost, that you get thrills out of holding hands with somebody.
Oh, it's so lovely.
Yeah, and I love all that. And it's a great rock and roll track as well.
Well, Tony, let's hear that now. Brought back memories.
Fantastic.
I remember jiving to this. Oh, it's great.
You're not that old.
Oh, well, my agent used to say I was the oldest juvenile in the business, and I'm still laying claim to the title.
That's a great title.
It is. Now, Tony, you've worked on many of your own projects, film and TV and stage and radio, and I'm quite intrigued. I know I saw this a long time ago. You had a five-hour thriller, Resort to Murder, for London Films and the BBC, which was winner of the Cologne Film and Television Festival. So I'm sure I did see this, and can you tell us a bit more about this?
Yeah, it was one of those ideas I'd had kicking around in my head for a long time, and it was all set in Brighton. And it started off on the burnt out pier in Brighton, which is virtually defunct now.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but it wasn't quite as defunct then as it is now. And it started off with this murder that happened, and it was witnessed by these people, and that's how the whole plot sort of developed. And it was really about this underbelly of the society and how you sort of slowly peeled away the layers, and eventually you got to the murderer. You know, it was just a great thriller. I've often thought about doing it again, actually.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
You know, and probably maybe setting it in America.
Oh, that would be good, wouldn't
maybe
it?
Maybe somewhere like Palisades Park.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I do remember it now. I remember it very well.
Ben Chaplin played the lead.
Yes, Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's great. And also, of course, you did Headless, which was through your own company, Sanctuary Films, for Channel 5. And that was a kind of black comedy horror, would you say?
That was spot on there.
Yes.
Yeah,
good. Thank God for that.
Yeah, black,
got something right.
Horror. That's great. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a you know, none of those wacky things. The great thing about doing your own thing is that, you know, I spend a lot of time doing work which is mainstream drama, which is you work within the parameters, and I totally understand that, and that's how they work, and that's what works well with them. So it's nice occasionally to do something that isn't within those sort of parameters. And the great thing about Headless, it was just a bit of a seriously wacky story about this block of flats where people were finding, you know, people without their heads on. Slowly, over 10 episodes, we found out why these people were getting their heads chopped off. So it was great fun to do.
Well, you know, I live in a block of flats, and I often think if you take away the front, of it, and it's like a doll's house, all sorts of dramas are being enacted behind those walls.
I think that's exactly what we were doing.
Yes.
You know, exactly
yes.
that at all.
You don't
fact,
know.
We filmed, we used the flats, the exteriors of the flats in Chiswick, bizarrely enough.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Not far away. And you know, they could have been really any block of flats. They were just, you know, the ones we chose. And we did actually the interiors in the studio, but the exteriors were done in Chiswick.
We don't know, do we?
No.
Anything could be going on. It's not just the old dark house with the cellar and the attic.
No.
Block of flats too.
Exactly.
Anyway, your next track is Hoochie Coochie Man, Muddy Waters. And why have you chosen that?
Well, I suppose I think the blues generally is just such a massive influence on, I think, everything I've ever done. And when I remember hearing the blues, you know, like in the early 60s, which was the first time we sort of got that sort of American throw over from the, you know, we hadn't heard of it before, you know, it was just phenomenal. I just remember it just hit me really brilliantly, and I think blues is about passion and pain, and I think that's what good writing's about, passion and pain.
Absolutely. And this was recorded by Muddy Waters.
The gypsy woman told my mother before I was born, I got a boy child coming. He's gonna be a son of a gun. He's gonna make pretty women jump and shout. Then the world wanna know what this all about. But you know I'm here. I got a black cat bone, I got a mojo too, I got the John the Conqueror, I'm gonna mess with you, I'm gonna make you girls, lead me by my hand, then the world will know, the Hoochie Coochie Man, but you know I'm here. On the 7 hours, on the 7 day, on the 7 month, the 7 doctors say he was born for good luck, and that you see, I got $700. Don't you mess with me, but you know, yeah. Well, you know the Hoochie Coochie Man.
I loved it.
I think that was... I don't know if that version was recorded, but it was originally recorded in 1954, I think. Which is amazing, isn't it? How long it... You know what I mean? It goes back.
Yeah. Fantastic. Amazing. Now, Tony, you created and produced a highly successful Delhi-based Indian drama, Yasus Vijay. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yasus Vijay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a...
Near enough.
Oh, dear. It was a detective series.
Yeah.
And it was... It tackled the subject of AIDS and HIV. Now,
yeah.
How did that come about?
That was a strange one, because I was invited to come on and sit on some sort of council or panel of things from BBC World, and because they were wanting to do a whole push in India about the problems of HIV and AIDS, and they were worried that it was going to become the next Africa.
Mm.
And there was going to be this massive push as an educational push.
Sure.
And they really originally wanted the soap opera. And they wanted to do the soap opera. So I said, okay, but it was to be done in Hindi. It's not in English, of course. You know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, and so I said, and I put in my two pennyworth, as I would, and I thought, that's the end of that. I'll walk away from that. And then they get the phone call and say, look, would I go out and, consult a bit on the programme in Delhi? And I said, yeah, sure, I'd love to. So off I went to Delhi. And when we got out there, what I realised was that a soap opera wasn't the demographic, the audience we really were trying to hit, because it was mainly women that watched soap operas. And the guys, which were the guys we were trying to target with were actually didn't watch it. They watched action movies and action films and, dramas like that. And so I'm sitting in the hotel on a sort of Saturday or Sunday morning thinking, what am I doing here? Because I don't know what the heck.
Get me out of here.
Yeah, because I've got nothing to do here, you know what I mean? But here I am. And then I saw this list of adverts for... in the front of the paper, in the local paper, where they get detectives that go and search out and check on people's dowries, whether they're honest or truthful, and it works both ways. You know, to check out whether the dowry's there or whether they're going to give the dowry or whatever. So, and I thought, well, that's it. We create a detective series round this character, around a detective character that goes out to, and it could do it in the big conurbations like Delhi, or it could go out to the villages and have adventures, and that's exactly what we did. So we did these sort of 2-hour films, basically, about this detective, and away it went. And I think it reached something like number 9 in the ratings, so we did
all right.
Yeah.
So how many episodes?
Well, I think we did... I was involved in the first couple of series off and on. And like I say, I was working with Hindi writers anyway, so we'd come up with the storylines and sort of work around them, and then they'd go away and write them. So I can't remember exactly. I think it was 12, I think, first series, and then another 12 second. I think I did 3 series in all. So
God, that was a challenge, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great. I mean, it was a fantastic experience as well.
Of course.
You know, and I loved it. I loved India as well. India was fantastic.
It'd be amazing.
You know.
And also, it's something different, because it wasn't something you'd done before.
No, exactly. So, it was really, really...
And it stretches you, doesn't it, to do something like that?
Yeah, and you're working with different people in different circumstances. It's fantastic.
And you have to make each other understood.
Yeah.
Is that as well?
And I didn't speak a word of Hindi, but thank goodness I spoke English.
Well, thank God for that. Might have been a bit difficult otherwise.
Yeah, I think it was not a big problem.
Anyway, Tony, you're the Stones next, Midnight Rambler. Why have you chosen that?
Well, again, I suppose it was the Stones that really introduced me to blues. I would have never heard of people like Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker or any of those people if it hadn't been the Rolling Stones. They were just fantastic. They were just like they came on the scene in the early 60s and they were just wonderful. Blew me away, and they continue to blow me away ever since, I think, you know.
And they're still going.
Still going.
It's wonderful.
That's fantastic. Fantastic band.
Well, let's hear the Stones.
Thank you.
God, that's amazing.
It is, isn't it?
God.
It's totally anarchic.
I know.
It's crazy. It's like a good script. I think Keith Richard once sort of described that as sort of an operatic pop song. You know what I mean? And I think it should be like a good script. You don't really know what's going to happen next.
No.
And it doesn't just carry straight on.
Well, I wasn't sure when it was going to end. And I thought I better keep quiet in case I interfere. So, no, I thought that was quite amazing. I mean, I've always said, Tony, you're a rocker at heart.
Yeah, probably.
And you should have been a rock star in another life.
I wish I had been.
And maybe you will be in the next life.
Maybe.
But, you know, I always think of your parties when you set up your band and we're all rocking away and it's absolutely lovely. So when are you having your next party, Tony?
Probably, my son-in-law's 40th next year, so you better be there, and David.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Can't wait. I'll count off the days.
Yeah, I'll let you know exactly when.
Oh, do. Now, you've written many plays for radio, and No Get Out Clause won an award. What was that about?
No Get Out Clause was actually, bizarrely enough, set in Brixton.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and it was a story about a man's relationship with a drug dealer, basically, who was feeding his daughter, and it was how he got his revenge on this dealer, really.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was quite a very dark piece, and it was just a really, really weird, the late Norman Beaton played.
Oh yes!
It,
oh God, fantastic. He was such a good actor, Norman Beaton.
Yeah, Peter Vaughan played the detective. You know, it was a really brilliant Judith Jacobs, who went on to do various other things as well. You know, it was a really good cast.
And it won an award.
Yeah, we won, I think, two or three awards for it. I can't
remember.
That's
great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fabulous. And on stage, you've directed plays such as On Golden Pond, Laburnum Grove, Still Life, well, of course I know about that, which was originally a radio play, and Chekhov's Three Sisters, which was performed in drag.
Yeah, on a revolve as well. We had a We had a revolve that kept going round with this sign saying, "This way, Moscow." You know, it was, I loved it.
Where did that go on?
Where was that? That was where was that? I'm trying to think where that revolve was. I can't remember exactly. It must have been in. It must have been in rep, one of the rep shows. I can't remember.
Oh, really?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I'd seen it, actually.
Yeah, I don't think the audience got it.
Oh, I would have got it, I'm sure. Now, you went to see Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
And this changed your whole way of thinking towards musical theatre. And you have chosen Heaven on Their Minds by Zubin Vala. So I'll play it first, and then you can tell me,
okay,
and everyone else your thoughts and feelings after you saw that show.
Sure.
My mind is clearer now, at last, all too well I can see where we all soon will be. If you strip away the myth from the man, you will see where we all soon will be. Jesus, you started to believe the things they say of you. You really do believe this talk of God is true. And all the good you've done will soon get swept away. You've begun to matter more than the things you say. Listen, Jesus, I don't like what you see. All I ask is that you listen to me. And remember, I've been your right-hand man all along. You have set them all on fire. They think they found the new Messiah. And they'll hurt you when they find they're wrong. I remember when this whole thing began. No talk of God, then we called you a man. And believe me, my admiration for you hasn't died. But every word you say today gets twisted round some other way. And they'll hurt you if they think you've lied. Nazareth, you're famous, I should have stayed a great unknown. Like his father carving wood, he'd have made good. Table, chair and oaken chest would have suited Jesus best. He'd have caused nobody harm, no one alive. Listen, Jesus, do you care for your race? Don't you see we must keep in our place? We are occupied, have you forgotten how but now we are? And our conquerors object to another noisy sect. And they'll crush us if we go too far. If we go too far. Listen, Jesus, to the warning I give. Please remember that I want us to live. But it's sad to see our chances. But now it's sour. Yes, it's all gone sour. Listen, Jesus, to the warning I give. Please remember that I want us to live. So listen, Jesus, to the warning I give. Oh, I just want us to live. It's all gone sour.
So this was a show which blew your mind.
Fantastic. You know what I mean?
It's great.
You know, when up until that time, I'd sort of, you know, there'd been Hair, and I think I may have seen Godspell, I can't remember if that was, but they were out around at the same time, you know. And they were okay, they were great, you know, they were a lot different to Oklahoma and Carousel.
Oh, absolutely.
And everything else I'd been brought up on, yeah. And, but then when I saw Jesus Christ Superstar, I thought, oh, wow, this is the business, you know what I mean? It was fantastic.
I felt exactly the same when I saw it. You know. I thought it was great. Was that what inspired you to direct musicals such as School, Cool, Salad Days and Cabaret?
Well, they were just all part of the what came part of my life somehow. They were just came up. They weren't really... It was certainly Superstar that probably made me want to write a musical eventually.
Yeah.
But, you know, the directing of them just was part of the jobs.
Sure.
You know?
But
I just... loved that, and I just thought it changed the whole face of musical theatre as far as I was concerned.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And it's still a great piece. That's part of the 1996 record, which I thought was terrific.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And I do.
And it still holds.
Oh, it does.
Up today.
It does. I mean, it was the sort of show I could see again and again.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, I mean, we had this, because Jan, my wife, had never seen it. I'd seen it in the early 70s and she couldn't come for some reason. We had a friend in it. Anyway, we were in Boston and it was on in Boston.
Oh, really?
And I can't remember what year this was, in the 90s or 80s or something. And I said, you've got to come, we've got to go and see it. So we trugged out and the snow was as high as the buildings. And we trugged out in this snow and everybody else had dicky bows on and we had sort of like anoraks.
Oh.
And we get there and we sit there and I was so excited about seeing this. And it came on and it wasn't very good.
Oh, no.
And I thought, maybe I've got this all wrong. Maybe it just has dated, you know what I mean? And I thought, oh, this is terrible. Oh, I've been selling her this show for years, you know. And eventually, anyway, it was shortly after that, the 1996 production came along, which is, like I said, that was taken from. And we went to see that. And it was obviously the production wasn't very good because that one was brilliant.
Oh, that was good. And so she thought the same when she went to that. Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh.
She knew what I was going on about.
Oh, God, yeah. That's lovely when that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, you've now chosen Red Right Hand, and there's a story behind that.
There is. Shall I tell you that?
Yeah.
Why I chose that?
Please,
well, I mean, basically, I have a great son called Matt, who's also in the business, and he's done a million things for me in my life as Matt. Done lots of things, and we've done lots of things together, and it's been great. But one of the things he's done tremendously for me is introduced me to other music.
Aww.
Yeah, and this was just one of the people he introduced me to, which is Nick Cave, and I just thought, this guy just blows me away. I think it's brilliant.
Oh, well, I don't know if I know this, so I'm looking forward to listening to it now.
It's a bit weird as well.
Oh, I like weird. Weird is good.
Take a little walk. Where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it shifts and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand. Wrap you in his arms, tell you that you've been a good boy. He'll rekindle all the dreams that took you in. Destroy. He'll reach deep
self-respect. You feel like an insect. Well, don't you worry, buddy, cause here he comes through the ghettos and the barrio and the barry and the slum. His shadow is cast wherever he stands. Stacks of green paper in his red right hand.
Visualized
what?
Weirdos in a ghost town in America in some horrible old dark house where you might get your head cut off.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's so dramatic, isn't it?
Fantastically
dramatic.
Very. It was, and that sort of sound of bells or whatever that was.
Brilliant.
Gave me the shivers, actually.
And I love the lyrics as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm a lyric man, obviously, because I'm a writer. You know,
of course.
What I mean? And I'm probably going back to Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Tim Rice's lyrics are just superb.
Spot on, really.
Just
weren't they?
Amazing, phenomenal. You know what I mean? But I love the lyrics of that as well.
Oh.
You know, Red Right Hand.
Oh, God.
I'm not quite sure what it's all about, but I just love it.
I think we have to use our own imagination and we can all visualise different things.
Which is great, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Now, your next track, actually, it was Sally who introduced you to this, an American trilogy,
yeah.
Elvis Presley. So, would you like to tell us?
Well, it's now for something completely different,
yeah,
isn't it?
You know? Absolutely.
It's again, you know, it's the influence, you know, my kids, well, first of all, my wife has on my, Jan has on my life, which has been phenomenal.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean? And
of course.
You know, and I can never quite thank her enough for, you know, being so supportive.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you know what it's like.
I do.
You know, this business is very difficult, you know.
Very
at times
hard.
And you need somebody who actually believes in you.
Oh,
and,
God,
you know,
yes.
I mean, and
yeah.
She's been brilliant. And part of that, all that, we have two fantastic kids as
they
well.
They are indeed.
And and Sally's wedding day, which was a fantastic party at our house, you know, which was brilliant. And which I think you were there.
I was.
Indeed.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. This is the record she bought for it, because we'd all been listening to it for some reason, and she bought it and put it on the jukebox, and it just reminds me of everything. And I think it's just Elvis, you know, I mean, whatever we say about him, he's the king.
Well,
you know what I mean?
He was the king.
You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just terrific as is. His voice is phenomenal on it.
Oh, so let's listen to him.
Oh, I wish I was
in a land of cotton. Old times there are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Sing it, fellas.
Oh, I wish I was in Dixie, away.
Dixieland's where I was born. Early Lord, one frosty morn. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
Always remind you of Sally's wedding.
Always, yeah.
Smashing.
Yeah, and then, you know, you can't. I've listened to it. I don't know how many times. I don't know, maybe 1,000. I don't know. But every time it gets you.
It's terrific.
Fantastic.
Really terrific. Now, Tony, as a writer, director, and producer, you have hundreds of hours of screen credits to your name. You've lectured all over the world on screenwriting, directing, and producing. What advice would you give to an aspiring writer?
Keep trying.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're all in the same boat to a certain degree.
Of course.
Do you know, it's a very funny, talking about Tim Rice. He's just had From Here to Eternity, you know, on the West End.
That was ambitious, actually.
Very ambitious.
After the film.
Yeah, I mean, but what was interesting for me, there was an article in one of the papers over the last few days saying how how difficult it was for him to get it on. Now, here's a guy. Here's a guy with an amazing track record.
Yes.
And you know what I mean? And you'd think if he walked into anybody's office and said, yes, ticket, let's do it, let's go away and do it.
Yeah.
Not the case. He's like the, you know, we're all in
he's
the same...
He's like the rest of us, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
We've just got to keep on trying. And if you're a young, aspiring writer, you know, you just got to keep on trying and believing in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And learning. Learning, you know, it's a big learning curve. Every day is a learning curve for me.
And in fact, if that can happen to Tim Rice, in a way, it is inspirational because you think you're not alone.
Absolutely. There's a great book that I'd advise any aspiring screenwriter to read, which is by William Goldman, that wrote Butch Cassidy and all that stuff. Fantastic screenwriter called The Adventures in the Screen Trade, right? And in it, he actually says, nobody knows anything. Do you know, and that's the great phrase. And when I read that book, which I read very early on in my career, you know, and I thought, William Goldman, the guy must just write a screenplay and it gets done. Not at all. He goes through the same hoops we all have to go through. And in a way, you're absolutely right. It's inspiring in a way. You
it
think
is.
You're not by yourself.
No.
You can just get out there and have a crack and sometimes it'll work and sometimes it won't.
And also, we all have our own insecurities and we do need people to believe in us.
Yeah.
And that is so important.
Yeah. You still, you know, and I think the longer you're in the business, actually, strangely enough, the more you become insecure.
I agree.
You know.
I agree. Because you kind of feel you're as good as your last thing. And are you going to be able to follow that?
And when I first kicked off, I don't know about you, it's just like, I thought everything was great. Everything I did was great. Now I think everything I do, is it good? I don't know.
I know. It's really weird. It kind of, you feel more nervous and more insecure as each year goes on.
I certainly and do, yeah.
I do too. Oh, God. Then, anyway, your next track, Tony, is Moondance, recorded by Van Morrison.
Yeah.
And what's your reason for that?
Well, I would, you know, I don't know how many years ago it is, but I co-created Holby City. Mm. And then I was asked if I'd be the exec producer on the show and story consultant. And I didn't have to think hard about saying yes. I said yes, you know, and which was fantastic. And it was a great opportunity. And the very first episode I wrote and I also produced on it was an episode which starred Paul Bradley, it was about his wife being taken to Switzerland to be an assisted suicide.
And what I
did when I took over on Hollywood was introduce music into the show, which nobody had really done in the way I did it before, and this was one of the first times, and Moondance was the title of the episode and the song that was used a lot through it. And it was just always reminded me of a great time for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was given an opportunity not a lot of people ever get offered, you know, and it was fantastic.
And also, of course, it won, Holby City won the BAFTA Award in 2008.
Yes.
And that must have been a really proud moment for you as co-creator and executive producer.
Fantastic, Jackie. Oh, you can imagine. Great. It was just getting your BAFTAs fab.
and actually, before we play this, I must mention that you yourself have received an honorary fellowship from your old drama school, the Rose Bruford College, and an honorary doctorate from the University of Bradford.
I have, yes.
So I wanted to put that in as well, because why not?
Yeah, I'm a doctor, you see. So,
it's terrific.
If you get anything wrong with you, just say, I'll get my medical bag out.
Oh, this is lovely. Anyway, we will listen to Moondance and think of Holby City and that particular episode.
Thank you.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. Yeah, I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. Yet all the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. My love, can I just make some more romance with you, my love? Well, I
wanna make love to you tonight. I can't wait till the morning has come. And I know now the time is just right. And straight into my arms you will run. And when you come, my heart will be waiting to make sure that you're never alone. There and then all my dreams will come true, dear. There and then I will make you my own. And every time I touch you, you just tremble inside. Then I know how much you want me that you can't hide. Can I just have one woman dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love?
I thought it was great.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just show I'm a bit romantic as well.
Oh,
in there.
Of course. Absolutely, Tony. Now, Tony, what are you currently working on? I know you've got masses of projects on the go.
Yeah, we've got, I'm still doing lots of television, mainly lots on Casualty still and things like that, and lots of things in development, and a possibility of a new film called Kidnap we're developing. So it's all going on, and there's the musical as well, which we, is going to be launched in 2015. Which has been a long time coming, but there we go. That's how it is.
Well, it was originally showcased at the Edinburgh Festival under the title of Bloodbath, but you've now changed the name to Night of the Prom. So why have you changed the name?
Partly because what happened was we actually did a focus group on it. We wanted the show to be actually a show that attracted a lot of a wide audience.
Sure.
We didn't, you know, we could have gone for a sort of culty type of audience, you know, which is fine, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we just felt the show was actually designed for a sort of wide audience.
Sure.
And unfortunately, the title Bloodbath We're putting people off.
What, in droves?
I think it was called Bloodbath the Musical.
Yeah.
And they never got past the bloodbath bit. They didn't get to the musical. You see, I thought the joke was in the musical, but, they didn't quite get there. So we did some focus groups, which is in connection with Bradford and Lambra Theatre.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that's where we're opening in 2015.
Oh, good.
You know, so, and this was the title that came up. That top of the list.
Well, it's funny.
I like it.
I love it. Do you remember, I said to you, is this a horror movie? Because as soon as I heard Night of the Prom, I thought, ooh, this sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah.
So I would have thought, though, that all the horror buffs would have actually been flocking to see Bloodbath. But as you say, you wanted to appeal to a wider range of audience.
Not just the horror buffs. We want them as well. Of course.
but to appeal all round.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we're going to play a track from the show, To Serve and Protect, sung by Gary Amers and Amy Pemberton, which is co-written by you, Young and Maguire.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, let's hear this.
Yeah, well, he's my hero.
Wanted to be the man who changed the world. Wanted to be the man that got the girl. Or the twist in the tumble dryer. Top of the list of woman's desire. Wanted to be the hoop that made the basket. Or the mute who told the classic. I wanted to be the strap on Monroe's bra. And all the guys. Does he put the spark in your fire? And does he put the tread on your tire? And does he put the egg in its attic? And does he put the rot in a rotic? He's not a real man, you know his image is worn. He can't be a man.
Beef against the innocent.
You're a little angel in a gossip whirlpool, the victim of a malevolent school. They'll simply turn, I've seen it all before.
Oh, Tony, that was fantastic.
Well, I think it sort of encapsulates what the musical's about, which is about the crazy lyrics but a good rock score.
Oh, it's great. It's great. You know, I wish you all the best of luck with it.
Thank you.
It's really...
Well, you better be there on opening night.
Oh, absolutely.
And giving your review for this radio show.
Oh. No, I think it's terrific. It's absolutely wonderful. And I also wish you luck with all your other projects, your film and TV projects.
Thank you.
And I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Jackie.
And thank you all you listeners who tuned in today. It's wonderful when you join me like this. And I hope you will join me next Wednesday when I shall have another guest for you at 3 o'clock. So have a good rest of the week and a fantastic weekend. Bye for now.
The Jackie Capri Show.